podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
I'm Sam Keir, host of Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. For the past 12 months, I've been talking to T20 star David Visa, getting his take from behind the scenes at the IPL, the 100 and the rest of the world's biggest leagues.
That's the Don't Nearly View system, Diogo. There's no ways in my mind that was up.
These guys don't know how to win at this stage.
He had his driver pick him up in his Bentley.
People start chanting your name. You kind of have to pinch yourself.
Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. Listen now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Sport Social.
Hello and welcome back to Tennis Unfiltered with me, James Gray of iNews.co.uk and the iNewspaper. It's day 12. It's quite hard to keep track at this point. It used to be easy because the day would start on day one on the first Monday and you would work through, and so you would know which day it was by what had happened. Women's semi-final day, you knew that that was day 11. But because the Australian Open started earlier, this is now day 12. Yes, that makes sense. As I say, women's semi-final day, one match probably more interesting than the other to most people. A de facto final, I called it on Twitter, and for once I didn't get much pushback on that, so I think probably a fair way to describe it. Actually, in her post-match press conference, Coco Gauff very nearly called it something quite similar before correcting herself. So I think everyone knew that it felt like whoever won that first semi-final between Coco Gauff and Aryna Sabalenka was almost certainly going to become Australian Open champion. We may, of course, be wrong, but that seems to be the consensus about how it's going to go. Let's start with that match between Gauff and Sabalenka, because it was the sort of big billing. It was the headline act. Chung against Yastremska, a little bit of an afterthought after that for obvious reasons, given that this was a rematch of the US Open final. It was a match between two reigning Grand Slam champions, Gauff, of course, winning the US against Sabalenka last year, and Sabalenka being the defending champion here in Melbourne. She won her 13th straight match in Melbourne. I said before, someone asked me, Gauff or Sabalenka, there was some kind of Gauff movement in the press room that maybe she would be able to use her superior head-to-head over Sabalenka, and that might indicate something. But I'm afraid for me, and I hope I predicted this at some point before in writing or on podcast, but I never had much confidence that Gauff was going to be able to stop Sabalenka, who has looked completely unstoppable over this fortnight. I mean, until last night, or until the Gauff match, she had not lost, or she had not lost more than three games in a set. Her set scores had gone 6-2, 6-3, 6-love, 6-love, 6-2, 6-3, 6-3, 6-2. I mean, that is just utter dominance. And so I'm afraid when she won the first 7 points and then broke Gauff for a 2-love lead, it didn't surprise me that much, because, like, she hits the ball so cleanly and so hard and takes it so early that it's very hard to kind of get in the way of that. It really is steamroller stuff. And I think probably it's a huge credit to Coco Gauff that she was able to scrap her way back into that first set, because it very easily could have got away from her very quickly. And that's the other thing with Sabalenka, is you really can just be like 4-1 down after absolutely no time. And this is partly the problem with best of three, that is a huge lead. You know, in best of five, you can drop a set and it doesn't really matter. Whereas in best of three, you're halfway to defeat, and I think it's just a completely different game at that point. You're just teetering on the edge. So, yeah, I think that's one of the reasons. I mean, there are many reasons she's a tough opponent, but I think that's one of the reasons Sabalenka can be such a tough opponent. Gauff did struggle on serve. Like, you know, you take Sabalenka out of the equation and she hit 8 double faults, I think, in the whole match. 6 were in the first set. And that, like, you can't do that, realistically. It's just, it's too many free points to give your opponent, and too many opportunities, quite frankly. So I think, I think she, I mean, it's not a secret she's always had this problem on second serve, but I kind of did a bit of a drill down into the first serve numbers as well. And I'll link to this in the show notes because I wrote something about it for iNews. But her first serve is fast. Like, she hit the fastest serve of the tournament last night, 124.9 miles an hour. You will not be surprised to learn in the first game with new balls. It's not effective. Like, the numbers show that it's actually not that effective. She's only been winning in this tournament 71% of points behind that first serve when it goes in. You take Sabalenka, she's up at 77. And really, when I looked at all the numbers, all of the elite servers are above 75. And those stats bore out last year over the whole season when I think Goff was around a very similar number. And again, all of the elite servers were above her. They were a good 5 or 6% above her. And that doesn't sound like a lot, but I think it's indicative of the effectiveness of that first serve, which is not as high as it could be. And then, of course, when you get to second serve, and that's where the real weakness is. Like, you know, the first serve is like a few percentage points, but the second serve is massive. Goff was winning 45%. Of points behind her second serve in this tournament. And, you know, that is in five matches that she won, you know, where she was winning the majority of points overall. And then, of course, the double faults. I mean, so her second serve points won percentage was 55th in the tournament as a whole, which I'm afraid it's going to be very hard to win titles, especially against someone like Sabalenka, who is so strong on return, who's so aggressive on return. I specifically asked Goff about standing there and trying to hit a second serve when you know that Sabalenka is going to jump all over it. And as you know, Goff is a great talker and she always tries to answer every question as honestly as she can, or at least she seems like that. And she said, I've played her so many times, it's just part of it. Sometimes she's going to miss and sometimes she's going to make winners. Today she was hitting winners. I think, and I'll come on to the other part of her answer in a moment, but I think that's all very well to say, but, and you know, she does have a positive head-to-head, but I think you've got to have a plan for those days when she is hitting winners, like, you know. And to be fair, I think Goff did then have a game plan that she tried to execute, a kind of plan B. It's like, well, okay, well, my second serve's getting annihilated. And in the second set, she took a bit of pace off it and just tried to place it a bit more, tried to take it out of Sabalenka's sort of hit zone a bit more. And I think with some success, to be fair, she made an interesting point. She says, well, it doesn't matter if it's faster because she's stepping in no matter what. So actually it was more about placement. And I think that's probably a pretty reasonable assessment. You will have heard her talk before the tournament, and we mentioned it, that she went away and did a couple of days with Andy Roddick, working on her serve over the off season. Jim Courier was interesting on commentary, as he literally always is. Said that he'd spoken to Roddick and that they talked about what she'd been up to, and it was all about her ball toss and getting that more consistent and just having the ball in her hand for a little bit longer. So just talking about the release point of the ball toss as a very amateur tennis player, and we'll talk with Calvin about it when we do our full tournament debrief, I'm sure. As a very amateur tennis player, the ball toss, I always basically found the hardest thing, even though it should be the easiest thing, because it's just throwing a ball up in the air in the same way. It should be the easiest thing, but it's clearly something that can make a tremendous difference. And, yeah, it's clearly a problem for Goff, and she's going to have to fix it. That's the only way I can say it. I mean, look, she's been tremendously successful so far without having to necessarily fix it. The second serve is still a problem. The forehand is still a problem. And she's world number three. So, you know, that I think that's very positive. But if she wants to be world number one and win, like, you know, 5 or 6 Grand Slam titles, which is, you know, very within her wheelhouse, then clearly that's an issue. But she's 19. Like, it's so easy to forget because she's such a confident woman and she talks so well, and she's also been around for like 4 or 5 years. It's so easy to forget that she's still a teenager. I think this is going to be her last Grand Slam as a teenager. I think she'll turn 20 before the French. But it is remarkable how much time she has. You know, she could have another 15 years on tour, easily. And we'd look back and say, oh, remember when Coco Gauff had a rubbish second serve? So I think that's, I think it's something that, it's a work on for sure, but I think it's something that she will and can work on because she has the time. Sabalenka, meanwhile, just needs to work on staying in whatever zone she currently is in because it's very hard to see anyone beating her. And like, even when she goes to Indian Wells in Miami or, you know, even the French, frankly, I mean, I know it's different, but it feels more and more like the only person who can beat Aryna Sabalenka is Aryna Sabalenka, because it's such an uncompromising and unchallenged like level of performance. It's very difficult to see anyone hanging with it. I mean, Gauff is the kind of player who can, because she has the physicality and the athleticism to hang with her, and you know, she's got that strong backhand which helps. And did fire a few times last night, and it was a great reminder of just how good that shot is. But even Gauff took 10 games off her, which is, in fairness, I think she'd only lost 11 games the whole tour, or 15 games the whole tournament up until that point. So, you know, 10 games is a pretty big achievement. But do I think Jung can beat Sabalenka on Sunday, on Saturday? No. Like, God knows what the odds will be, but like, I think the bookies are probably giving Jung like a 5% chance. And I think that's probably about right. Like, I think it might even be less than that. Look, it's a tremendous achievement for Jung. And I know I posted the other day that the world rankings of the players that she's beaten on the way. And it, you know, it's pretty remarkable in terms of like, runs to make a Grand Slam final without playing a player in the top 50 is pretty crazy. The top ranked player she has played is Katie Bolter, who I think was 54 at the time. She's played 76, 54, 94, 95, 75, 93. Now, look, some of those, like both Wang Yifan and Diana Yastremska, I would say are misleadingly ranked in the 90s because of situations, but yeah, the others, I suppose, are probably about fair. And I think the unfair thing on Jung is, you know, that will always be held against her, but she's a really good player. You know, she won the title in Chengdu last year. She got to the final in Zhuhai. I think she won two titles last year, or maybe three. I can't quite remember. I've got in front of me. But she's someone, you know, whose stock has really grown over the last 2 years. And someone who I think a lot of people have expected to make it into the top 10, as she now has. And is also a player really respected on the tour, for everyone seems to say, well, I know she can play. And the fact that she happens to have had a good draw. Look, you still got to take advantage of a good draw. Like, you still have to beat the people in front of you. And she's done that. So I think she deserves credit for that. She's the first Chinese player to make a Grand Slam final in 10 years. Of course, since Li Na did so here. And Li Na met Zhong Xinwen for the first time this week, which was a huge moment for Zhong. There is a video of it, of course, because there's a video of everything. And she talked a lot about Li Na in her post-semi-final, pre-final press conference, and what a big deal it was to meet her, and what a big role model she was, you know, as someone growing up when Li Na was in her pomp. That was a huge deal for Zhong, who also comes across really well. Like, she seems like a very sweet girl and a woman, I should say. And yeah, she just comes across very well. And I think, while I don't think she's even going to win a set in the final, I think she will be a good addition to the top 10. Obviously, the organisers here are really excited about the prospect of having a Chinese player in the final because of all that it means for the Chinese market, which, you know, time zone wise, obviously, it's a very good market. I think Beijing is only 3 hours behind Melbourne, so that works really well. I wish I could see more than just a commercial success for her after this final, but I'm afraid it looks pretty one-sided. Right, moving on to men's semi-final day on Friday. Djokovic against Sinner in the day, of course, because they played a day earlier than the other half of the draw. And then Medvedev against Zverev in the evening. I mean, Medvedev-Zverev is the matchup I was probably looking forward to the most. Like, Djokovic-Sinner from a tennis perspective is great. I obviously watched Sinner beat Djokovic in Malaga in the Davis Cup, which was a brilliant performance, save match points in that as well. But Medvedev-Zverev, anyone who's watched the Zverev episode of Netflix will know just how highly charged this rivalry is. Again, I will put something in the show notes that I've written, which kind of details all the reasons why and wherefore that they don't get on quite so much. You know, whether it's Daniil Medvedev's wife, who is very good friends with Olya Sharipova, the Zverev's ex-girlfriend, who of course made those allegations against him, which he denies. And also, they go back a long way. You know, they came up at the same time. They're quite similar ages. I think Medvedev's about 15 months older than Zverev. But they came through at similar times. They played in juniors. I think, from by all accounts, they were a bit friendly in juniors. But then, I think, as life went on, they realised they were quite different people. And Zverev does not like Medvedev's shithousery, quite frankly. And Medvedev is the absolute king of it. And I think especially once he knows he can get in your head, then I think that sort of multiplies quite how bad he's going to be. I think he knows. I'm sort of looking forward to him almost coming out like in a clown outfit and just with a whole box of tricks, you know, going to the coin toss and shaking Zara's fake with a fake hand, or, you know, like a flower that squirts water and stuff like that. It wouldn't totally surprise me. But I'm looking forward to it. Obviously, it's a good one for you guys back in the UK because it'll kick off at 8:30 a.m. so you can at least watch it, whereas Djokovic Sinner will be a 3:30 a.m. start, so it doesn't really work for the UK audience, unfortunately. But it'll be a good one, and I'm sure you'll enjoy watching the highlights, or if you do manage to stay up all night, then credit to you, but I've never been able to do that properly. It will be a challenge, to say the least. That's probably all I've got for today. As I say, I'll put a few links to those things I discussed in the show notes. Please make sure you vote for us in the Sports Podcast Awards. You've got about 2 days left to do so. And we are desperate not to lose to Dan Kiernan again. He does a great podcast, but he won last year. It's our turn. So get on and vote. Click the link in the show notes and do your bit for Tennis Unfiltered. Sports Social Podcast Network.